Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am really excited today to bring you Iris Dement. Iris is coming to our Vashon Island on the 18th of July, and I know folks are really excited. Concert's sold out, but I understand there's a waiting list. So if you're hearing this, you can still see her and you'll want to. Iris is beloved by many of us on the island, both for her music and beyond that, I think for some of the stances that she's bravely taken about our world today. So let me tell you just a little bit. And first of all, Iris, thanks so much for making time for me in your busy life.
Yeah, I am so happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Iris's voice was once described by John Prine as like you've heard, but not really, and inspired Merle Haggard to call her the best singer I've ever heard. And I understand that. Your voice is so clear, and it rings. And it's been ringing for 40 years now, which is quite amazing. It's still a beautiful voice. Your unforgettable melodies are rooted in hymns, gospel, and old country music. And you've been called one of the finest singer-songwriters in America and one of our country's fiercest advocates for human rights. So again, you're coming to Vashon Island. We are really happy to be welcoming you. A friend of mine on the island who was excited that I was going to talk to you said, oh, I love Iris. And I saw her in 2016 at the Pink Door in Seattle. And it was a momentous concert because you got up on stage and you told your audience that you almost didn't want to sing. And that it had been your daughter or maybe your stepdaughter who had said, Iris, you got to sing. And you did. And it was a wonderful concert. And I think about that because ironically, it seems like it's been a really bad week in democracy land. And so I'm wondering, how's your voice doing with that this week? Do you feel like singing?
Boy, that's a big question. I feel when I'm singing, I feel like singing. Does that answer it?
Yeah, when you get on, when you're there, when you click into the groove.
When I go into it, whether it's on stage or at home, there's the world being what it is, I find that I have to take the physical action and move myself toward the singing more than I had to in the past. But once I'm there, it's the same home that it always has been. And that's the important thing. Maybe even a more solid home than it was before. I feel even more sustained and, strengthened by the singing than I did in the past. I need it more. Mm-hmm. And I feel that listeners, the folks that aren't so inclined to sing but are more inclined to listen, I feel that they're in the same boat as me. They need it more too. Any of those kind of things that we humans have been doing forever seem to be, for me, more important than ever. They're anchoring reminders, some continuity, and just some of the basic things that we need that unite us. And I don't mean unite us in our opinions. I don't think of my job with music to unite people in opinions, but to unite us in spirit, just to be sitting and listening to each other in a space with some beautiful melodies swimming around our heads is that's a good thing. That's something nature intended, it seems to me. So
yeah, I think it can be really transformational. It kind of goes in different. It's not necessarily going into your head and trying to fix things up here. It's going into your spirit and allowing you to reground in what it is to be human, you know, when you're listening to wonderful music. And at the same time, I was, you know, you had talked about 2016 and how hard that was for you. I remember at that time after the elections, I crawled into a little ball, and the only thing that got me out was a song by Carrie Newcomer that I listened to again. You Can Do This Hard Thing.
Yeah. You Can Do This Hard Thing?
Yeah, it was.
I don't know that song. I'll have to go look for it.
It's a wonderful song. It's a wonderful song. It doesn't speak to politics per se, but it speaks to that inner strength that pulls us through when it's really hard. And I pulled on that song. And then this week, I couldn't read stuff going on, but I went to your song, Working on a World.
Mm-hmm.
And I played that several times. I sent it out to my blog this week because that was also saying to me, come on, Sally, we're playing the long haul. Remember that. We're playing the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
And some of your music just, it's so uplifting, but you don't pull your punches. So I really appreciate that. Yeah. And a lot of that, some of that music was written after 2016, you've said, as a way to cope. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Working on a World was Warriors of Love, going down to sing in Texas. I can't remember the rest of the songs, but yeah, a whole bunch of those were written following that cataclysmic shift. Yes.
And when you write, are you thinking, like, I got to say this to my listeners? Or are you thinking, I got to say this? There's something in me that just has to get out. What is the genesis?
Well, the primary one for me is I'm trying to sort something out for myself or find some comfort, some sense, make some sense out of something. Sometimes, you know, I'm just trying to unnumb myself, you know, it's so easy and probably often necessary to go through life a little distanced from, you know, our heart.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not necessary, I don't know, but I find myself doing a lot of that. And then that becomes horrible. And that's where the music will come in for me. I'll go digging around for something in that world that will get through to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's what I'm trying to say, is I'm often trying to get through to myself. And I know I can be a tough nut to crack. So I figure if I get through to me, probably, you know, someone else is going to, it's going to work for them as well. But that's also one of the really terrifying things about writing, is that, you know, if that's my goal, to get to my heart, then I can't be worrying about what people think about what I'm saying. You know, and that next step of taking that thing out into the public, it's as frightening today as it was when I started, in some ways more so.
How is it more so?
Well, I think more so in that once you get some sort of name for yourself and you get a hand, you know, some approval, then you're risking losing that approval, you know. When I started out, I was starting from square one, so I had nothing. You know, I felt raw and it was scary, but I really didn't have anything to lose. And so now you've got that, you know, you've got fans and folks that have notions about you, this and that. So, you know, there's always that. And I think, obviously I don't let that interfere with what I'm doing all that much. or I would be writing very different kinds of songs. But yeah, I mean, there's that element to it. No, I mean, I've always tried to serve something, for lack of a better word, better, I guess, deeper, to serve the soul of this human soul and this that I share with other folks, and to serve that as best I can. And there's another thing, and my husband talks about in one of his songs I recorded, Walking Daddy, that notion, that idea, that mission of being useful, just being useful, you know. And some of it is just straight up that, like, I would just flounder around and feel like I don't have anything, I'm not contributing anything to the world. I can't hardly bear that for too long a period of time. And I've discovered that that seems to be the main thing I'm able to offer that's useful. And that's very satisfying to us humans, I think, more so than we talk about that often, to be of use. It's a just maybe the most important thing we got going for us. But so there's that too. I'm trying to be of use to my fellow citizens and my human family and the earth. And so that's really what it's about for me.
Yeah. I've heard you talk. You came out of a Pentecostal family, and it's been interesting that you are respectful. You know, in the interviews I've heard with you, you speak respectfully of what you took positively from that background, at the same time taking a major step away from the brim and damnation and dogma and things that also went with the church and all. Do you feel like you're that the desire to contribute to make the world a better place came out of your childhood, or did you pick it up along the way?
Oh, I would say it definitely came out of my childhood. I didn't frame it as making the world a better place when I was young. I framed it as you know, serving the spirit, that was the religion, that was the framework it would have been presented to me, and to serve God, to serve the spirit, and to pray for direction as to in what way you were to do that. And I was a kid, but I spent a lot of time praying for direction. And you know, I'd feel that it arrived, and when I started writing songs. I'm grateful for the religious framework that I came up in for that, if nothing else, that I was directed in that way. I wasn't directed to be famous. I wasn't directed to go see how many people can know my name. I wasn't directed to be the top of the heap. I was directed to find a calling and be in service to the spirit. Mm-hmm. Now, I came to define spirit a little bit differently as I got older and so forth, but parts of it are still what I deep down understood. I realize hasn't really varied that much. There was something I understood that was quite outside of the dogma, even as a child, understood that, and I embraced that, and boy, I probably hold firmer to it now than I ever have, you know. There's just something in that. I mean, talking about the Pentecostal church, I mean, there's loads of problems. and, you know, in my opinion, problems that have worsened, you know, as they've clearly aligned themselves with authoritarian fascists and, you know, liars, etc., in a big, big, big way, and enabled some of the worst political stuff that, you know, this country's ever seen. That's disheartening, and that's a whole nother layer, you know, that we could get into talking about. And I am certainly not on board with that in any way, shape, or form. But again, I mean, in life, I was fortunate that I had a framework to help me understand myself in a soul, on a soul level, and my place in the world on a soul spiritual level. Mm-hmm. I'm deeply grateful for that. I took it seriously. I responded to it deeply at a young age, and I've carried that with me ever since. And I had the wherewithal to be able to let the nonsense, to recognize what I viewed as the nonsense parts and let it go.
You left pretty early on, didn't you? Were you in your teens or?
Well, I was in my teens when I left the church, but I had an experience when I was about, I think I was in second grade. And, you know, the sermons were all, you know, that everybody that doesn't believe in Jesus Christ is going to burn in the eternal hell. Fiery furnace, you know. And I took that quite seriously. And I decided, you know, I need to stop taking recess. And I need to spend my recess making sure that my friends and the other kids on the play yard don't burn in the fiery furnace, which is a very logical response to take. And I'm proud of myself for that. I took the adults around me seriously. They said other things that made sense that helped me guide my life. So they must know what they're talking about, and I need to respond accordingly. So I took that on, and I started trying to witness during my recess instead of playing tetherball and such. And then I was having a tough time, and I thought, well, if I could get a box of New Testaments, the little, you know, just not the whole ball of wax, just the basic, you know, stuff that gets into how you don't go to the fiery furnace, just cut to the chase. And as that was a priority, I thought I'll get a box of those. And I remember going to the church on Sunday, and I asked some adult there, I told them what I was up to, and I felt really strongly if I had a box of New Testaments that would help me get everybody saved. And I remember the person just smiling at me in that awe, you know, that cute kid kind of way you do, awe. And I instantly knew the grown-ups don't believe this. That was my moment of whoo, you know. And of course I plotted ahead, you know, I hadn't fully let go of the thing, but you know, the crack, it was a major crack. I didn't get the testaments, and I basically was encouraged to go play recess and, you know, don't worry your little self about that. And I knew right then and there that this is a Sunday thing. That deep down, I had serious doubts that the grownups really believed that, or they were able to I'm talking on a deeper level than now than I understood at the time. So, you know, but I get now that it was kind of one of the agreement things we have in groups that, you know, a lot of it is not rock solid. It's just what we do to be a group a little bit, you know. And so anyway, that opened up that was a crack that started leading me through some other cracks have a way of growing.
Hopefully the light comes in, you know.
Yeah, by the time I was 16, yes, I did stop singing in the choir, and then I tried to go to a different kind of church, and it just never worked, you know. Once you've questioned some of the basic foundational premises of one of those churches, you're screwed. You either look the other way or you go along. And
I'm talking to singer-songwriter Iris Dement, who's coming to Vashon on July 18th. It sounds like that spirit connection, that desire to be led by soul and contribute, continues. That's part of the theme that you're carrying into your 60s, you know.
Well, absolutely. But another thing about those churches is so much of what was relayed was through the music. My folks came, as did I, from Arkansas, like down in that Delta region. That the music was what sustained those people that were barely getting by. Whatever the music was, in my parents' case, it was largely, you know, gospel music. There was a ton of overlap between working Black poor people, working Black cotton picking white people. Everybody was struggling. My parents struggled. They were sharecroppers. You know, my mom grew up with newspapers taped on the wall to keep the wind out. They were right on the edge, and the music in those churches, it sustained them. It was not a party. I mean, granted, it was. They also had really great times in church, but it had a meaning that really went beyond the religion, I think is the point I'm trying to make. And in some ways wasn't even really linked to the religion, I might even say. And that's what I picked up on. And I picked up on that my job when I came to songwriting and singing is to do that thing for the people that are listening. To give them something that'll get them through. I still feel that if I don't write songs that I feel fall in or pretty darn close to that category, I throw them in the trash. You know, I just don't. I'm not interested in entertaining people. I'm interested in giving them a ground to walk on. You know, because that's what I was taught and that's what I saw. That's what I respect. That's what I want to emulate. And so that's what I'm aiming for.
I love the quote from your mom, singing is praying.
Yeah, I would say so. And that's how I would agree with her. And that's how it feels for me. And you don't always want to pray. When you asked me, do I feel like singing? You don't always want to get down on your knees and pray. Sometimes you're just like, you know, enough of that. There's this resistance, you know, meditating or what have you. But yes, once I go in there, that is how it feels for me.
Mm-hmm. You wrote Let the Mystery Be 40 plus years ago. Is that right?
Well, that's such a big number. Are you right? I wrote that in 90, it was on my record that came out in 92. So that's 40 plus. It'd be like 35 maybe.
Okay. 40. Yeah, the start
probably
of your
1990.
Okay, yeah. And did that come out of your searching?
Oh gosh, you know, it's funny how songs, I really have very little memory of writing that song. Oddly enough, I remember taking a break to go outside. That's about the extent of my memory writing that song. Like, whew, I gotta go outside for a while. And I remember I was living in Nashville. I lived there for a couple of years. I mean, it's only one of the most popular songs I have, but about all I remember was being out in the front yard and enjoying the sunshine.
Wow.
Break from the song. Because at that time, especially, I was just writing a lot, you know? So, you know, you're just writing what's passing through your head, what bubbles up to the surface. You never know. Oh, this is going to be the one that stops people. I sure did, but
yeah.
I mean, I imagine that song. I'm just talking about something I lived through and kind of thinking, well, where am I on this topic?
Mm-hmm. How would you say you've changed since writing that song, or
changed in what way? You mean changed my opinions, or changed?
Yeah, just changed. You know, Let the Mystery Be. Would you have phrased it any differently had you been writing it now?
No, No, I can't imagine why I would. There are certainly songs that I listen to now that I can hear, my young self, choices of words and things that I'm like, I probably wouldn't do that now. No doubt. But the thing that I do feel good about my music is because I've always been so intent on speaking in my own heart, I can feel an authenticity in all of them, even the songs that I'm like, ew, that's not that great. The core of them, I feel pretty at peace with overall. I'm not trying to yank anybody's chain. I'm not working a deal. I'm genuinely trying to connect and express something to the best of my ability. I was never trying to get rich off of my songs. You know what I mean? And I feel really good about that. Even the ones I'm not crazy about now, I can handle not being crazy about, word choice, or maybe I could have left that topic alone. But my intent and what I was trying to do in the world is, and for myself and for other humans, that was always pretty righteous, and I feel good about that. And that I'm happy about that now that I look back on them.
Have you ever, has it ever been a challenge to distance yourself from the commercialism and the record industry and the trends that make it so hard for singer-songwriters to survive? Do you, 'cause there's the writing from that place of authenticity that one really feels listening to your music. But then there's this boogeyman out there called how the record industry works, how the music industry works, all those changes, the difficulties of making any music in the music industry. Have you been able to just sort of keep those at bay, not have to worry about them, or do they come slithering in and
Well, I just never played that game. I never, it's not difficult because I just never did it. I never tried to walk that line. I played at 200, 300, 400, 500 people a night. I'm not a big, I go out and I play music. I work for a living. Possibly, had I done some of what you were talking about, I might be playing to 600, 700, 800 people. I don't know, but that was never on the table. I never, going kind of back to my church background and my spiritual foundation, that just never even wasn't going to happen. I went to Nashville and I talked to people who wanted to groom me. That was their term, groom me and style me and put me together with hit songwriters. And I said, no, I just, that wasn't what I was up to. So I knew from the get-go what I was going to do if it meant I played to 5 people or 5,000. And I have never wavered on that. I have never had any regrets. Zip. So no. What you just asked me there,
That's
no.
pretty.
The most complicated the thing that I can share with you on that I do get, I can't say that I've really enjoyed spending so much time talking about myself. That is kind of counterintuitive to my nature. And if I could do that again, I would have talked about myself a whole lot less. But
But people do want to know, so.
yeah, that's part of what needs to happen. And then with the whole social media thing, if I were starting out today, I don't think I could make it because I can't psychologically and emotionally tolerate the social media world. I've tried. I got on Twitter for a couple of months and I realized that was so damaging to my mind, my soul, waiting for a like. It made me ill, and I have not looked at any of my social 8 months. I literally couldn't tell you the password. it could be blowing up with, you know, horrible things. I don't know. It could be glorious things. My makeup is such that I can't dabble in that. It makes me physically sick. I can't think about my work. It's very deeply disturbing to my counter to anything that applies to my work. And so consequently, I totally ignore it. I have somebody who posts, you know, Iris will be here and there, but I can't look at it, which today is considered rude, you know. I can't really grow my social media because I won't participate. And I'm 63 and I'll write it out that way. And I really feel for the young people that are forced to engage in this. It's a capitalistic machine that has nothing to do with art, has nothing to do with real, true human connection and relationship. I just can't do it. So I don't know quite if I'm answering your question, but that is really the only challenge. I think I am answering your question. That's really come up with Mick for me. And that is that's something, if I were starting out now, I'd probably just stay and continue waitressing because that is so destructive to the art creator person in me. I could not be out there actively soliciting fans. I can write songs and hope that fans will love them and come to me. That's a whole different thing. But me personally, posting pictures of myself and shit to get fans, that wrecks my soul.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like you know what feeds your soul, and your music comes from your soul. So if you're screwing with your soul, it's not going to do good for anybody because that's the source of your music. So
I've just had to accept that. And you know, I think it's hurt me, you know, financially and numbers wise, and I don't flipping care. I don't care. I really don't, because if I don't have that thing that was handed and taught to me when I was a little kid, that is everything. It's flipping everything. It's the spirit. It's everything. If I don't have that, I don't have anything. So
yeah,
if everybody goes away and I'm sitting here, you know, I don't know what would become of me, but that's fine.
Well, one of the things I appreciate about your music a lot is that it feels like you have followed where the thread has pulled you and created different work out of that. It's not all the same. You can sound like country, and then you did a gospel album, and then you did the album with the lyrics by the Russian female poet. Now, you probably didn't do that. Like, let's have a commercial smash. Of course, you're not doing that anyway. You did that because that's what called you. And then you went and did more protest music. But each of those sounds like it was following an impulse that you had at the time.
Yeah, an impulse and sometimes a voice. And that's another thing that came out of my church. The grown-ups told me to listen for voices. So I did. You know, and sometimes I hear voices like that Anna Akhmatova project. It was literally, I didn't know her. I didn't know her poems. It was just like somebody walked in the room and said, do that. And I did. There was no history leading up to it, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, again, circling back to the roots, you know, my religious, spiritual roots, I've just stayed pretty locked in there. It served me well. You have to be careful with that stuff, with going around and saying, God told me to do this, God told me to do that. I get that.
That's different than saying, I heard there's a voice that's speaking to me. Because I believe in that hugely. I think that's the creative impulse for a lot, is just listening in whatever way that voice comes through and trusting that voice.
Yeah. And one thing is the voice isn't telling me to tell you what to do.
That's a good one. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And you're not proclaiming it as the word of God, but you can also feel right. like you have a kind of holy connection. It's just not going to be, yeah, it's personal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you hearing any inklings for what's next, or are you waiting to
see
what comes through?
I have this, been having this feeling of late, like it's time for an inkling.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? There's like a build up to the voice. There is that. Mm-hmm. There's like this period of feeling something shifting and something is needed. And often that's when I'll start hearing things or find, you know, this direction.
I love that. Yeah.
So we'll see.
I love that because I feel like today in my world, I look to the people who I think have some depth and wisdom, and I want to know what's coming through them. You know, what are you hearing? I don't want the pundits. I don't want the newscasters. I want folks who are genuinely listening and then able to translate that in some way through their work, you know, because I'd be interested in hearing what comes through. I want to tell you a short story just as an acknowledgement, because when we're talking about faith and spirit and all, when my sister was dying, she was dying of ovarian cancer, we probably had our very best conversation towards the end when she was starting to talk about her memorial. And I asked her, you know, what she thought, you know, about faith or afterlife or God, you know. And she said, if you want to know what I believe, listen to this song. And it was your song.
Oh.
And so it was the first thing that she knew she wanted at her memorial.
Uh-huh.
And so obviously I'm choked up because I can't listen to it. It's not a preachy song, but somehow the spirit comes through in a way that just carried forward. So I am very indebted. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm really glad. That's the joy of music, that you know. Hearing you say that reminded me of an experience I had once when a friend of mine called and said, you need to turn on the radio. Garrison Keillor is singing your song when my morning comes around. And at that time, I was going through a severe depression, as in like crawling on the floor. Like getting off the floor was a challenge. I'm not trying to be melodramatic. I'm just stating facts. And I remember thinking, I don't know if I can get to the radio to even turn this on, but I scrawled over. I turned it on and there he was, and he was singing my song. And I'm just thinking about how when you write something, there's that initial, oh, my song, you know, this thing, the me, I did this, that. And I heard that song coming back to me and I realized, how do I put this? It saved me in that moment. And it saved me, and I had no connection to it as something that was mine. It was something that had boomeranged. It took off. Someone else took ownership of it. And then they sent it back to me to help me. But I didn't feel ownership of the thing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
And when I heard your story about your sister, I was reminded of, I didn't feel ownership of that song. I realized that the music goes out and in a strange way, it's no longer mine. It's only belongs to the person who needs it. And there's just this beautiful thing about that quality that music can do that. I just love that.
I think that's so,
to have that come back and just truly, like, deeply, I got that. It was never my song. It was something that passed through that helped me, and it's just circulating around, being sent back to me. So I'm happy to hear that you're your sister received that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was a fan, but that was the song. And I am, and my brother-in-law, Thump Thump, will be at the concert on Vashon Island. So we'll have a little squad there, listening.
Okay.
We're looking forward to seeing you. And again, I hope people who don't have tickets will run out and get on that wait list. I think you're a great fit for our venue. You know, you got a bunch of really caring people here on the island, a 300-seat venue, and a lot of people who love your work. So it should be great.
You know, if I remember right, hadn't I tried to come to Vashon during COVID? Wasn't this one?
I heard some rumor like that. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And I'll be there with my friend, Liz Draper, who's a phenomenal bass player, wonderful musician, and Myra Burnett on guitar. So we'll have a little trio on this trip.
What a great event. So thank you so much for taking time. I know you don't, you just said you don't like talking about yourself.
I enjoyed talking with you. If topics get a little off of me and get into the broader thing, I enjoy it. And I felt that we did that. So,
right. Yeah. Well, thank you again so much for your time. And I can't wait to hear you in person.
Well, I'm looking forward to being there. I hope that I get to meet you in person.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.